Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door. No insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
The Survivor Specialists are back, and today I am joined by Drew Basile from Survivor 45. And I don't know, people might have seen you on TV a little more recently, right, too? You had a little run on something?
Yeah, you know, my Survivor winnings fell a little short. I had to go run up the tally on Jeopardy. I mean, it was easy money, smart guy like me. So that was fun. And you'll be seeing me back on your TV screens sometime next year, Tournament Champs. That probably won't go as well. But yeah, Phil, it's great to be here talking about the world's greatest game. I think somebody said that at some point, but I agree with it. Survivor, the experience of a lifetime, and I'm happy to break into 47. A good season, but maybe a dip in quality from our past two. That's unfortunate.
See, I've actually really enjoyed the start of this season, but I think what's really helped that is the fact that each tribe has gone to tribal council early. That's what I've probably enjoyed most about it. Yeah, I mean, I could see where, you know, three boots you weren't necessarily expecting, but where are you seeing the drop in quality?
Well, first of all, it must be said that if you had asked me about my assessment of season 45 at this point, like three episodes in, I would have told you that it was one of the worst shows on television. Like Manu had single-handedly, I don't know how he did it. You know, he was so powerless out there, but he single-handedly destroyed a marquee television program. So that being said, the first three episodes don't mean everything, mm-hmm. but I think that the cast is not that likable, you know? They're not playing, you know, necessarily great in the way I would like them to play. But some of these tribes are just painful, man. Like the Blue Tribe, charisma vacuum. The Blue Tribe, it could be the most unlikable tribe of the new era, legitimately. They suck. So anyway, I mean, when you got like, you're running a three-legged race with like a dead person, it's tough. But those are just my initial thoughts. It hasn't got the momentum. And Phil, part of that could be 45 and 46, both were kind of like miniatures at the beginning. They had like, you know, one tribe go constantly. So you got an early narrative. I mean, instead of having to wait all season for a narrative, you got one given to you right away to hook you. 45 was I think the most compelling part of the season with Emily turning around with Caleb. And then 46's was like, you know, watchable the way that like a car crash is. And this one is a little bit slower. So maybe that's just what I'm reacting to.
You're coming out hot. Anybody from Blue who's listening right now is about to start sending some emails to Ken Jennings or whatever to be like, dude, get this guy.
Yeah, cancel this guy.
He insulted us on a podcast.
I mean, what you don't see what I see. Like, what's your favorite tribe? Because there's a favorite tribe.
Red.
Oh, no,
well,
I'm so jealous, man.
Well, so here's the thing, right? I think what's interesting is if you were to ask me what my favorite tribe is, all five, like. Probably yellow, but all five on yellow are in the middle. Whereas I feel like red right now with Rome and Teeny and the disaster and Keyshawn too, and then the disaster that's happening around all of that, like they're closer to the top. So they're kind of bringing that average up, even if yellow is probably the more consistent of the tribes, because we haven't really heard from Saul or Genevieve much all. So that's hurting. But yeah, I think yellow is the most consistent. Red is the one I'm most entertained by. And then Blue, I'm just curious how that's going to shake out at their next tribal council, because I feel like things, even though everything seems like it's going bad for Kyle right now, I believe in Kyle. I don't know why, but I believe in Kyle.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've always been an edit reader. Kyle's not really getting, like, to me, Kyle's edit doesn't scream, like, next boot. You know, some there are other people in that tribe that I think their edit is a little bit more typical. But I mean, if you're Kyle, man, you got to face facts. Like this is a terminal diagnosis. You've got no vote. You're on the bottom. Everybody hates you for no reason. He's the nicest guy in the world. And they just won't help him out. For me, I like the yellow tribe. That's my favorite tribe for sure. I'm the kind of guy where it's like, why watch college basketball when I can watch the NBA? You know, the yellow tribe, there's a lot of talent on that tribe. I like talent. Whereas the red tribe is a struggle. I mean, it's the Rome sideshow. I'm not even going to call it the show. But even the best players on red are kind of making some screw ups. I mean, I don't know if we can swear on this, Phil, but I won't say that. You know,
can swear as much as you want.
Fuck ups. I mean, but you know, they're like even the best player. I've got some real gripes with the way that Keyshawn and Teeny played. I got some gripes. So yellow comes out as my favorite.
So let's talk about this with the red tribe then, because I think Teeny is pretty much hit under a rock after that episode aired where it showed her showing the box to Keyshawn and poor Rome comes walking up. I feel like Teeny, every time she walks into a room now, is looking over her shoulder going, hey, who else is here? But what do you think about this move to get rid of Asia and keep Genevieve? What's your take?
It's just so misguided. So misguided. I mean, actually, it was astounding to me that when he's just got the idol, okay, I can understand that. But Keyshawn and Teeny are dealing with a highly volatile player, Rome, who kind of reminds me of Q from last season in the sense that both are playing for the spotlight. They want to be in charge. They want to have big moments. And so they're highly volatile. And Rome doesn't seem to have a sense of loyalty that Q did, right? So this guy has just told you that he has a steal a vote, which means when you get down to five people, even with two, him and Genevieve, that's a majority. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't he play the steal vote to make a big flashy move, take the majority from you two who have not been super loyal to him, who he caught, you know, looking at his idol before he got to it. Why would you ever put yourself at that level of vulnerability? I mean, it's astounding. I couldn't believe when they found out that information, they were like, whatever, you know, let's betray like the two most reliable people who, by the way, I will bet you that when Rome came back from the journey, he was like, oh yeah, I told them Saul and Asia are like, you know, top dogs. So if that becomes true, if Tini and Keyshawn side with them, then they've got easy cover going into a merge. Whereas now, I mean, you've got an alliance held together by like shoelaces. It's just baffling to me. I mean, Phil, you help me out. I'm spiraling.
Here's my thing. First, I got to throw this one up. This is from Worth Playing For. Thanks for the super chat, guys. Love the pod. Love Drew. So thank you so much, Worth Playing For. Here's my take on it. And I've thought about it a lot more since it aired on Wednesday. Sorry. I don't know what the hell just happened to me. But since it aired on Wednesday, here's my biggest take. Tini and Keyshawn have to be worried a little bit about the volatility of Rome. Mm-hmm. And if you vote out Genevieve, you know that Rome has a steal a vote. Now, granted, at Final Five, the best he can do with a steal a vote if nobody wants to work with him is make it 3-2 and whatever. But you also know that he's been out hunting for idols. He's found an idol. I also truly believe, because we never really saw the massive blow up, I don't think that Tini and Keyshawn are in as bad of a spot with Rome as they should be after the box situation happened. I actually think Rome is still cool with them. And if Rome's cool with them, then why vote them out? So I feel like I talked about it. I had Bradley on from Ghost Island on Thursday. I was chatting with him and we were talking about how Rome is actually somewhat predictable right now, even though he's unpredictable. Like you can predict his unpredictability, but somebody like Asia who just went home, She's a wolf in sheep's clothing. She's pretending, oh yeah, I know the game, but only Tini really knows that. I'm gonna be quiet and reserved and whatever. But that's gonna be scary somewhere down the line if you start to let her get her legs underneath her. Rome, I don't think he's gonna be able to keep it together that long. Plus, we see him in the preview for next week screaming at Saul. I mean, he's yelling at him, so I don't know.
You know what? People probably said the same stuff about Q last season, the third half. Oh, like Q's going to crash out. Q. And I mean, he did. He crashed out like 20 times. But look at the carnage he left along the way, you know? So there's this sentiment right now that you can farm your goats. You know, you can become the shepherd. You can have your volatile players who are always going to go left when you're supposed to go right. But you can just anticipate that. And in reality, why tether yourself to an anchor? It just doesn't make any sense for me, especially when somebody like Asia, like, yeah, she's probably smart. I mean, podcasting isn't a surefire success rate to playing Survivor. She had some strategic blowups here that were easily avoidable. I'm sure that when the game got more complicated, they would have, you know, there would have been other opportunities to screw up. Mm-hmm. But just from my perspective, I'll take the stable and predictable and also more out front than I would a kind of volatile player who is going to be fundamentally unreliable. And I mean, like, on Red, we kind of had like that with Sifu a little bit. Like Sifu was making fake idols, made like 20 fake idols, was hiding in the bushes every day. Like you'd have to look in the bushes before you started talking, like hamming it up for the camera. Sifu had his own dedicated camera crew. It'd be like two crews on the beach and one would follow Sifu all day long, every day. And the rest of us would just get one. We have to like wait, you know, wait our turn to be on camera. So I've played with this kind of like, you know, high profile, volatile player. And I can tell you like, it's not worth it in the long run. You know, you want people who might be bigger threats, quote unquote, but are not going to be as threatening to you as you know, paired with them. That's my assessment.
And here's Aiden Jones. Bro, why did we not get the Sifu edit? I've met Sifu twice now. And yeah. I will say when he walked into the room, I was like, that is not the man they showed on my television.
No way.
At all.
You know, Sifu's, I mean, we don't have to get into ancient history. I always, when I was on TV, I always hated when the has-beens talked about their time on TV, but I'm a has-been now, so I'm going to do it. I think maybe he wanted it too much. They were like, no, like you're playing it up. Like, we're not going to reward this. But there are so many, like on Reba, just before the swap, there was a huge blow up where we were all like yelling at each other caused by Sifu. And some of the confessionals actually that are given about like me finding the idol, like, oh, it's such a betrayal, are actually talking about Sifu at the blowout, which was like the same day. So yeah, that's a little bit of, you know, a little nugget of information for you guys. But yeah, suffice it to say, I think that Rome falls into the same like Q kind of volatility that mm-hmm. makes it unwise to couple with him long term.
Yeah. No, and I totally agree. I think there's something interesting that happened after season 44 with casting, where they suddenly sat down and said, you know what? Like, we want to cast a little bit more over the top. And I'm not saying everybody who's getting cast is over the top, but like you just said, the cameras might have felt like that Sifu was playing it up a little bit. Then you get a player like Q the next season. Then it follows up with Rome. It seems like they're being more willing to get those people who are going to push the boundaries a little bit rather than just going for straight game bots, which we did see for a good portion of the new era, but pre-45.
Yeah, I mean, they've got some, like, they're taking not just the crazy characters, but they're taking crash outs. You know, they're taking people who are going to self-combust, which is interesting. I think that the show has kind of, you know, a little, I mean, Jeff, you can tell, especially with him, but he's worried he's gotten soft. And so there's this, all this emphasis on like, oh, the new era is the real deal. You know, where it's as tough as ever. You can't steal any rice. Or there's like, you know, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if they're taking these like crazy people or burnouts just to kind of like, you know, make sure that we know they're still legit. But I mean, it makes it more exciting as a viewer. That's for sure. So
can't complain. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit. You've mentioned that blue is your least favorite and stuff like that. But before we get into your power rankings, who are you seeing going home this week? This is the most even we've ever had it after three episodes.
Yeah, I turned my light off. Oh, you got to tell me if it looks worse. I'm just getting my eyes. I don't know. It seems to me that the tribes are unequally developed. Even though, you know, every tribe has had a boot, the narrative lies more so in yellow and blue than it does in red. And so that indicates to me that red is probably not going to tribal, mm-hmm. right? Like even on this most recent episode, you had like that previous land survivor. And it was all this red stuff. I was like, this isn't previous land survivor. I don't even care about the red tribe. Like, why are we getting all these clips all of a sudden? So it made it obvious they were going to go to tribal council. But I think that there's a brooding feud with Sam and Annika that needs to be addressed. And I think that blue, there's like a lot of tension too. So I would be shocked if one of those tribes doesn't go to tribal this episode, for sure. I mean, what's your assessment?
Yeah, that's where I've kind of been. I was really surprised that blue even lost in week two. And then when red, then I was like, okay, well, blue or yellow is definitely going to lose. And then somehow red loses, and maybe the tribes are just more even. But if I was going to bet, like, who is the weakest overall, I still think it's yellow or it's blue. Like, I really do. And especially, I get the physical portion of the game doesn't matter all that much at this point. But with TK going home, I do feel like during the physical portion of the game, blue is always going to be struggling a little bit. We did see that last week, except yellow just, or red, whatever it was, they just couldn't get across the balance beam. And then they just absolutely imploded on the puzzle. I mean, that was probably the worst I've ever seen Jeff heckle a team. He was just like, you have no chance. Don't even bother.
So. I know there's a lot of pity going on right now for Asia. And yeah, I get she's the podcast darling, but I mean, her and Keyshawn single-handedly tanked that challenge. Like, they sucked. Mm-hmm. They blew the lead on the swimming portion, I think. I don't really remember all the details. But then they couldn't even get started on the puzzle. So it was a painful challenge. And removing one of those two potentially problem players in the challenge does set Red up pretty well. I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, it's two more boots, I think, until, like, Murgatory, just historically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And if that's the case, I would be shocked if yellow goes once, blue goes once. And we can choose what order it's going to be. I don't know. But yeah, I'm thinking that's in the cards.
I mean, and not to make too many comparisons to your season, but right now, Genevieve and Saul are getting about the edits that Jay Maya and Sifu got on your season. So are they being set up as that Murgatory right after Murgatory boot? You know, I mean, who knows?
Yeah. You know, I mean, not to get on my high horse and whine about the Murgatory, but the Murgatory is a tragic format because it encourages really conservative gameplay. So basically, if you're on the bottom at the pre-merge, you can never get back on top. Or I mean, maybe you can beast it out to the end of the game, you know, immunity challenge, things like that, but you're never going to get the social cachet. And so like the Murgatory, it typifies that. Like if you're on the bottom, you have no shot. You have no chance if you're not immune. So I worry about people like Saul who are just definitively on the bottom. Mm-hmm. Or somebody, I mean, like maybe Rome gets a little, you know, too crazy and they turn against him definitively on the bottom. Or on Blue Tribe, Kyle, I mean, dead man walking, potential immunity threat. Like if he's not immune, he's out of there. So yeah, we'll have to see. But again, that's not the next two episodes. And the late Premier's boot is kind of a more nuanced edit. I mean, like,
yeah,
famously, I feel like in the 30s, there were positively portrayed strategic women who would, and oftentimes like women of color who would go home at the end of the pre-merge. And that's kind of like an edit bookmark. And so then I look at somebody like Tiana and I'm like, uh-oh, you know, mm-hmm. or Annika, uh-oh, or I mean, not less Rachel maybe. But I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's jump into the power rankings a little bit here. Then we'll rank them. We're going to go 1 to 15 and, we'll start with one who's the safest and then we'll work our way through. So I'll let you go first. Who do you have as your safest person this week?
Okay, my safest person, easy pick for me. I think this person, I'm not going to say like undisputably safest, but there's no world in which Sierra goes home next week. I mean, who would target her? Everyone on Yellow Tribe thinks they're working with Sierra. I mean, she's the central number that pivots between them. And she's done a great job gassing those, you know, Rachel and Annika. Mm-hmm. The other tribes are like, is she dating Sam? And they're like, that's ridiculous. She's with us. Like, are you sure? I don't know. So she's safe as can be. I mean, there's no move made on that tribe that doesn't include her.
I love that point of the other, if she's blinded people enough to think that they're really close, but the other tribe saying you guys might be dating, that can't just be because they're both good looking. There has to be something that the other tribes are seeing that is happening on these challenge mats, whether it's little looks or something. There's something going on. And I would hope that would set off alarm bells. I think the problem, and I'm going to be honest with you, four of like my top seven people are on this yellow tribe, because I actually think the yellow tribe is the easiest one to identify who's going to go home if something goes wrong.
Okay.
How do you sit there? And I just feel like Sierra is doing something right. I hope Rachel and Annika would see that. I just don't think Rachel and Annika are being set up to have much success in this situation, especially Annika. Because I will say last week, the funniest part about, I think, last week's episode was the fact that everything she told Sam to do ended up being correct, but they still edited her to look like she was mean. Like there was something wrong. That's bad.
Listen, Sam is a 24-year-old dude, okay? He's fresh. You know, he's young enough to remember his mom, like, giving him a hard time. And so when you're like, you know, it needs to be shorter, Samuel. Like, oh, my God. Like, what is she's not even much older than him talking to him like that. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. That was disrespectful. If you want to try with me talking to me like that, I mean, it's personal. So I'm not sure she was completely right, Annika.
I think what I more meant was not necessarily how she said it, but what she was saying. Like in terms of chop it this way, do it this way, like everything she was telling, but you also have to deliver things right, right? This is what we saw pretty much every older guy from like season 20 to season 40 get in trouble for, is they didn't know how to deliver it to a changing group of youths, you know?
You know, it could be true, Phil, but I'll tell you, they don't even really sleep in the shelters anymore. They just sleep on the sand. Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea that like day seven, you know, when the merge is like 2 days away, 4 days away, whatever, you're going to rebuild your shelter when you're the hungriest point in the game. Also, it had just rained the night before. That's unrealistic expectations. So I don't know. I mean, I'm down on her. I'm pretty down on Annika, and she'll be at the bottom of my list.
Which is, again, that's again where I was going. I think it's obvious what's happening there. So my number one and two, I actually have Sam at one and then I do Sierra too. So that I think the two of them peas in a pod, I think they're golden. And Sam having that idol, again, it doesn't matter if the internet was talking about this a lot, right? And the internet likes to talk. That's what everything does. And so the internet was saying, you know, Annika, everything she was saying was right. And Sam just like, you know, was reacting however to it. But at the same time, if the rest of the tribe is looking at Annika going, we're going to boot Annika, then Annika's just in trouble. Like, it doesn't matter what she says or how she says it. If they want to boot her, look, I'll go all the way back to season 4. Hunter got booted because he rubbed people on his tribe the wrong way. There's nothing wrong with Hunter. There's nothing wrong with Annika. I think Annika honestly is delivering from a casting perspective. She's absolutely delivering. There's no question about it. I just think right now, wrong tribe, think she's got numbers that she actually doesn't have. So I go 1 Sam, 2 Sierra, and they might not be dating, but you know, we're going to keep talking about them. Like
they'll be at the top of the list for sure. I mean, I agree with that assessment. Did you have more to say on Sam, or is it my,
Oh, hang on. I got to throw this in. Worth playing for is just dumping money at me right now. Mergatory makes it way easier for the dominant alliances to solidify and then steamroll because they don't have the paranoid of getting voted out. So that's kind of what you were saying, right?
Oh, I mean, the thing about Murdatory is it's like the battle lines aren't really like set yet. Like, you can't go for anybody. You can't take a shot at the king. So people are really reluctant to reveal all their cards and to like really press against the opposing alliance because it's conditional who can go. The fact that so few people are up means that advantages can all be funneled towards that small number of people. For so many reasons, for gameplay reasons, it's a bad format. I mean, even if I think it makes the merge more entertaining potentially. Okay. So my second one is not Sam. I have Sam a little bit lower just because for Sierra, I truly don't think there is any possibility she goes home. I couldn't imagine a scenario. I can imagine a couple scenarios where Sam is vulnerable, but my second is Genevieve. This one coming up, I think that the way I look at it is you've got the red tribe is split between, you know, 2-2-1. Sol is like the charity case, which is really sad because I think he's got great fundamentals. I think he's got some of the most potential of anyone on this season. And maybe he'll get the chance to, you know, actualize some of that. But you've got him. You've got Keyshawn and Teeny, who are like being presented as kind of the masterminds of the tribe. But, you know, I think their power is a little illusory right now if push were to come to shove. And then you've got Rome and Genevieve. And I think if you're going to take a tarp shot at that Rome-Genevieve block, there's no point in leaving Rome as like some scorned guy, you know, who just manifests chaos. You're going to shoot for Rome. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think they would take the easy shot at Sol. So anyways, the point is that in both these scenarios, I think Genevieve skates by.
Yeah, going into last week, I think I had Genevieve as the lowest ranked person on my last week's power rankings from this red tribe. I thought that's who they were going to boot if they went to tribal. I was blindsided by the Asia boot for sure. And so I was thinking, I was like, Genevieve's in a lot of trouble. Now I come into this week, I think the core four is real. I do. I think the core four is a real thing on that red tribe. And I think that they're going to be able to take it unless somebody pisses off Rome. But I will say this. I think Keyshawn, Genevieve, and Teeny were perfectly designed to handle a personality like Rome's. I really do. I think it's going to work in their favor. You couldn't have asked for a better group of three to be on that tribe because I think they know when to push and when not to push. And they haven't pushed.
No, they've been perfect, except for the fishing thing, which I was on Rome's side about. Those guys are lazy.
I agree with that.
But the question that I would ask is oh, I had a question.
No, I talked too long.
No, you were so good. You're so good. Like, obviously, it's a perfect grouping for catering to Rome at this point. But like, is it really in their best interest to work long term with Rome? I mean, Rome is kind of a disaster, like a worst case scenario going into a merge, you know, and they have to know that. So I wouldn't be shocked if it's like, we're real for now, but you know, only for a couple more days, only for the last couple of days of high school. And then it's, you know, we're breaking up.
I think that's what's going to happen. And I do think that out of that group of four, I would say Rome's highest placement is third. I think he could beat Genevieve, or maybe there's a big blind side on Teeny or Keyshawn, but I think the other tribes are going to be scared of Rome. I think even more so than them. And I think that when it comes to it, like you said earlier, like, you know, a little push to shove here. If Teeny and Keyshawn are presented with something by yellow or blue, potentially as like a, hey, we want this alliance to go forward. We're kind of stranded. You're kind of stranded, but we want to get rid of Rome. Yeah. I think they might be willing to give up Rome to move further in the game. So Rome's not in danger. I don't think Rome's in really any danger this week. I'm super high, but I don't think he's in any danger this week.
I agree.
But I do think that he will be somebody that they are willing to get rid of. Now, they just have to actually make that move early enough so that he doesn't pull a war dog on them and be like, hey, I'm going to blindside you and you're never going to see it coming, even if it's going to blow up my game.
Yeah, I agree. So that's Genevieve is my second. I guess do I say my third now?
Go ahead. You can go third.
My third is Rachel. And again, just based on this logic of like, what are the contingencies and who's likely to go in them? There's no world for me in which Rachel goes before Annika if things cut against them. And it's sad for me because I really like Rachel. Rachel's from my hometown. I mean, she lives like a mile away from me. So that's cool. So I like Rachel, big Rachel fan. But it's kind of sad to see the way that Rachel and Annika have played their pre-merge, because what they've done is they've written off Andy, right? Mm-hmm. Crazy Andy, you know, blew up his game, blew up their game, woke him up in the middle of the night. It's not somebody who's tractable. And they've let Sam and Sierra recruit like the bottom person on the tribe, and it's what everyone should be working on with Saul right now. But I mean, it's really put Annika and Rachel in a fatal situation. And I mean, there's no trust between Sam and Annika. Sam finds the idol with her and he's like, oh, this is a disaster. It's not like, oh, we're in an alliance. It's like, oh, she's a liability. Mm-hmm. So again, I think that, sadly, Rachel has tethered herself to, somebody who is not, you know, the tribe dynamics are going to flow against. But the point is, that's good for Rachel for surviving this episode, because it's like, you know, why go for her when you got Annika?
And that's exactly what I was saying to you, right? Like, towards the top here, I'm loading up on yellow because I just feel like they're the one where if they go, it's pretty clear to me that it's going to be Annika.
Yeah.
So the drama of this episode isn't who will go from yellow, it's will yellow lose, you know? And if yellow doesn't lose, then it's okay. I don't know who's going to go from these other tribes. Maybe there's one or two people who could be chosen from. Although I think Saul is kind of being set up now too as a pretty obvious one. So we might just be set up for an obvious boot here unless Blue goes to tribal council, fingers crossed. Yeah. That being said, I will go ahead and at my number three, I have Teeny. I think Teeny rebounded perfectly from the situation with the box. She should not have gotten through this. Teeny should have been absolutely doomed when this happened, and it didn't doom her. And then what's even crazier is turns around and works with Rome to vote out somebody who was probably going to be willing to be loyal to her for a long time. So I think that it's like she clearly feels good with Rome. Her and Keyshawn are running that tribe right now. I don't know if Genevieve is closer with Rome or with them. I don't know what the edit really wants me to. The edit seems to want me to think that Genevieve is closer with Rome, but I don't know if I'm 100% buying that. I just think if Saul's not going to work with Rome, and if Keyshawn and Teeny are together, unless Rome is stealing a vote to vote Teeny out of the game this week, which I just do not see happening, there's really no way the numbers slip on Teeny or Keyshawn. So I have Teeny here at number three.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing because it's like so narratively, it's so obvious that like Teeny and Keyshawn are the centerpieces. Even though like, you know, their facts in the game are like, you know, they're not quite masterminds. So I do agree. I certainly understand the placement. But, you know, if I was out there, if I was Rome, I mean, now that I play, that's my metric always. Yeah, I would absolutely be thinking about the steal vote play, you know? I mean, everyone knows. People are obviously going to tell. I mean, there's a philosophy on the season, and you saw with Gabe, of let's burn advantages as soon as they can be used, right? Mm-hmm. An advantage becomes a detriment if it's not activated pretty quickly. And that's why everybody, you know, took the idols immediately. That was crazy to me. But the point is that I would be shocked if that's not an idea in Rome's head, even though it seems unfathomable. So anyways, I like your three.
So you would have gone for a deeper idol then?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, an idol, you've already done the damage, right? If you spend like a solid portion of that second day hunting for an idol that's worth one tribal council, I mean, there's no damage to your social game that additionally searching is going to be done. You've already created the impression. And the impression is recoverable, right? Mm-hmm. Gabe, everyone was like, oh, he's an idol crazy, but nobody cared. He still was in the majority. Because the idol is so devalued right now that like hunting for it is less threatening.
Yeah.
So I, you know, Sam, I'm big on Sam. I think Sam, just talent wise, best player in the season from what I've seen. Whether or not, you know, he ends up being, we'll see. But I'm just devastating when you take the like one tribal idol or three tribal idol, whatever it was. I mean, you'd give up early.
I'm a big proponent of, in this new era, I feel like the idols are so useless anyway. And maybe it's just because I'm coming off of 46. But I have said that I would just grab the idol and play it at the first tribal, because I've always said that if I get an idol, I would just play it at the first tribal anyway. I feel like people have gotten too good at the game. They're too good at lying to your face. It's gotten harder to read. And you are actually in one of the few alliances. I mean, the Tika 3 obviously was a thing, but I feel like you were in one of the few alliances where everybody kind of was willing to just keep working with each other through the game for pretty much as long as you could. I mean, you all made it pretty deep. I feel like nowadays, though, so many people want that big move so badly. And maybe it's also me thinking of it from doing this podcast for 10 years, where I'm like, somebody, if they knew who I was, they'd want to be the one who was like, I voted Phil out of the game. I would just play the idol. So I would be fine just taking that, because also I don't want the temptation, because at the end of the day, I am a gambler. And I feel like if I had the temptation to hold it, I'd hold it. And I don't want that. So I would just take one.
But there's such a difference between like you're right. People have gotten good at the game. I mean, it's pretty optimized. Mm-hmm. But like if you go back at 46 where you had like six people go in a row, every single one of those people knew it was like a 50-50. Like they were one of the names in the block, right? So it's not like they were just picked out of the sky and like struck by lightning. You know, they were just hubristic. I mean, you had a bunch of extremely arrogant players who went out back after back after back. And that was unfortunate. But I still think idols are insanely valuable. I think one of these seasons you're going to have somebody come along who really can utilize idols correctly. Maybe it'll be this season. Mm-hmm. And this stream of discourse is going to stop immediately because, I mean, it's a get out of jail free card. But we'll see.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too is like, hold on, where did my train of thought just go? You were talking about with the idols. Oh, I think what I've always heard from players who have played and who have found idols is that once you find one, you kind of know what you're looking for. Even if you don't find another one, you're looking in the crannies. You're looking for like, I mean, I always think about when Lauren O'Connell essentially tripped over the sock or whatever it was, and it was actually an idol. You start to know what you're looking for. And so I feel like if I found one and I used one, let me go find another one. Like they're going to rehide them. There's so many out there.
Yeah. I never hunted for idols. I just wasn't interested. But I hear that too. And the thing about having an advantage is that it's a great mental benefit because you have the safety net. So people are willing to play much more aggressively and confidently than they would without it. And confident and aggressive gameplay translates to success with or without that advantage. So it's a real psychological premium having an idol like that, which I think is underestimated too.
That's a good point.
Anyways, they should have searched more. Production was shocked they didn't search more. I mean, they thought they were going to get hours of content. So production went too hard. They overcalibrated. They made it too difficult, which is on them.
I will say this, though. I think Rome searches further if Teeny and Keyshawn, if he doesn't catch Teeny and Keyshawn with the box. I think he would have kept going. But at that point, he was like, what's the point? They all know.
Yeah. Yeah. That went good move on Rome's part. Mm-hmm. Is it your turn?
No, go ahead. Who you got before?
Oh, I got four. Okay. My fourth is Caroline.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, I mean, probably the tightest three in the game is this Sue, Caroline, Gabe grouping. I'm not really high on it, but I think that Caroline is very well insulated. Again, she's another like Sierra type where it's like, why would you take the shot at her? Rachel, why would you take the shot at her? You know, one thing you mentioned is like, oh, if I played, you know, everyone would want to take out the podcaster Phil. And it's something I really dislike, which is like this like checkmark survivor. You know, I got to go and make a big move. I got to do something new. Like I'm going to leave the beware advantage in the tree because nobody's ever done that before. But it's actually just a fucking stupid idea, you know. And in the same type of way, like when Sue and Caroline, and it's so innocuous, but when Sue and Caroline come back and they're like, we did a blind side. It's not even like we got our target out. It's like we achieved a survivor item. And like, that's that MBA type talk that I can't stand. It's like the resume stuff. It leads to a hollow, it leads to flaccid gameplay. So I don't know if I'm that high on Carolyn long-term. It certainly edit isn't, but just situationally, I mean, it's hard to imagine a world where she goes from that tribe.
Yeah, that was a really funny. This is the second time we've seen Sue in like an awkward celebration type thing. Because in episode one, when Gabe finds the idol, he says like, "Don't make a reaction." He's like, "But I found the idol," and she goes, "No, what?" And like she's crazy. And then this episode, Caroline starts celebrating, and Sue like is late to the celebration, almost like she didn't know she was supposed to start jumping up and down.
Yeah. Well, it's dark; she can't even see. I mean, they're looking at each other across a fog of night.
That is true. I just think it's funny. Like now we've seen Sue twice in those situations of like having the reaction that the other person she's talking to isn't naturally having. So I think that's funny, but I do agree with you. We've seen that people, that's again why I would probably play the idol, because I just think people are coming in with that mentality. Like I got close with Ben from season 46. That's not why Ben went to play Survivor. You know what I mean? And he got zero votes at the final tribal council, but at the same time, it's like he didn't go out there trying to do check mark. And a lot of people did. And a lot of those people who came in with check marks sat on the jury of season 46. They didn't sit the final three of season 46. So I don't think I agree. Like that.
I know that that's really a messed up jury. I got to say, I mean, like, I'm sure they're great in real life, but I wasn't a fan of the way they conducted themselves. But this checkmark gameplay, like, it's a little arrogant. It leads to very little continuity in your game. And continuity is what wins Survivor games. Having a narrative, I mean, it's a huge part of it. So anyways, I'm always suspect when I see it. Caroline, well, I mean, we don't really know her so well, so maybe I'm overreading into it. But I get worried with that kind of talk. But she's my number four. Who is yours?
I have Andy at four. And, you know, after week one, Andy's sitting there at the bottom. Then Sam finds that idol. And I say, oh, man, Andy's looking good. Because when Sam made the argument of I'm going to play my idol on Andy. And Sierra was like, well, I don't know about that. But then he was like, I was like, no, you are going to have a loyal follower. And right now, Andy is sitting back. He's calmed down. Like, we saw what we didn't get to see from Brandon on your season. On your season, Hannah goes home, and the next week, Brandon was right back in the fire because his tribe lost again. We've seen Andy now have 6 days to say, oh, okay, like I can do this. I can play this game. I can enjoy this game. And I'm appreciating that from Andy, and I do really think between Sam and Sierra, there's no way you don't pick Andy at this point. And Andy wants to work with them. I thought what was really interesting is in the first episode, Andy was doing that math equation, which I feel like the producers didn't really understand what he was saying, so I don't think they did it correctly. But so he's doing that math equation, and he's talking about you just need two people. And he tried to make that happen, and he fell on his face. Well, now he feels really good about having Sam, and what do we see him doing in episode three? I got to work on this with Sierra. I got to get in with Sierra.
Yeah.
He's making his plan work now, so why wouldn't he want to do that, and why wouldn't they want to work with him? I think that's your group of three for sure on that track.
Completely agree. This episode had a lot of signs of life for Andy. I don't think that Andy is ever going to fully recover, and part of that is the mental toll. Like, once you lose it out there on Survivor, it's almost impossible to get it back. And I don't mean that, like, your momentum in the game. I mean, like, your mental state.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of people who derail in Survivor and takes months afterwards to recover. You know, it's, I mean, like, when you get injured on Survivor, you don't heal, right? But, you know, your body does. You have so little nutrition. The same thing holds psychologically. So I think it's going to be hard for Andy to ever, like, get back to 100%. But there's a lot of promise, right? One thing I noticed, Phil, this episode was that episode two, Sam put on one of the most masterful narrative kind of like storytelling performances I think we've ever seen on Survivor. Every confessional, I was like, this guy is hitting it out of the park. I mean, he's perfect. Like, oh my God, like, there's no chance I'm getting on 50. Like, every confessional is a banger. But Andy took the narrative role this episode. Not only that, he was like, Sam's hit the Survivor wall. And Sam seemed markedly different. And the Survivor wall is very real, and it starts to set in around day 10. So he's a little early, you know, he's a young guy. Maybe he's flaking. I don't know. But the point is if Andy is becoming more, you know, socially integrated, his reads are 100% right on the dynamic at camp, which is a big turnaround from previously. And Sam maybe is falling off a little bit. Like, he's letting Annika get the best of him emotionally. I think that all of that bodes very, very well for Andy. So yeah, I like the position on number four.
Yeah. So I got him there four. Yeah. So why don't you go ahead? Actually, I have Caroline at five. So I'll just do my five then so that you just talked about her. So I have her right behind Annie, my first person from the Blue Tribe. I like Caroline's position the most on that tribe, just like you did. You had her as your top as well, because I think what's beautiful about the Caroline position right now is that Sue doesn't necessarily want to ever go back to Kyle, right? Kyle voted for her, so she can't trust that. Kyle's going after Gabe. Tiana's on the outs because Tiana lost TK and was always kind of the fourth of that alliance of four, alliance air quotes, because like you said, Gabe, Caroline, Sue, that feels like the real thing. And if they want to keep Kyle for strength, let's say they lose this episode, they'd probably boot Tiana.
Yeah.
There's no situation in which Caroline's name is coming up. If Kyle and Sue butt heads, Kyle or Sue go home. If Gabe decides he wants to turn on his alliance, Kyle's going to want to push for Sue. If Tiana can somehow get any, like, maybe she goes with the women, then Gabe goes home. I could see any of the other four people on that tribe going home. I don't ever see Caroline going home. So that's why I have her number five.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, to be on the bottom of the majority is a pretty cozy place to be if there's, like, infighting, you know? It's like, who's gonna look at you? So I had the same rationale with Caroline. And then my number five, Sam, I mean, what is there left to say? You know, triple threat. I'm a little worried that he might be stalling out a little bit, but I mean, we'll have to hear it. You know, we'll have to see a little more evidence. But I, you know, five similar, I think he'll be safe. I think the Annika boot is all but assured. If Yellow Tribe loses.
Also, like, did you know that Sam got, I think he was tied for the, so there's people who have 18 confessionals in episodes, 17 confessionals in episodes, and then 16 confessionals in an episode. So there's, you know, there's like six people with 17 or whatever, but Sam actually did have 16 confessionals. So he's like tied for the third most number wise in Survivor history from that one episode, episode number two.
I didn't know that, but it makes sense because I mean, he delivers narratively like nobody else does on this season. I'm not sure how good the storytellers are this season, but Sam is preeminent, and it's also a great sign because he didn't really do that much that episode. You know, yeah. I mean, they didn't even go to tribal, right? I mean,
yeah.
So if you're not going to tribal and you're getting that many confessionals, I mean, they think they've got somebody. So,
they like you. Yeah.
He's not certainly not going over episode four.
So then who do you have at six since we covered
my sixth? Yeah. My sixth is Gabe. And Gabe reminds me a little bit of Venus last season in the sense that strategically, I mean, he's A+, right? He's got all the right instincts, he knows what to do, and yet socially, I mean, he can't accomplish things he wants, right? He wants to rope in Kyle, correctly recognizing that he needs a guy to provide some insulation against the girls and that to offer some challenge strength to an otherwise weak tribe. Kyle doesn't bite. He wants to bring Carolyn in, and Carolyn's like, this isn't working for me, which is a crazy thing to say.
Crazy.
Crazy. So I guess, I mean, who can account for that? But still, I mean, Gabe must be having some negative aura if he's like alienating people like this. And then telling Kyle, like, oh, my alliance mates are goats. Like, okay, like, why would you do that? So it's tough. Again, I just think with his portrayal on the show, with the fact that he's obviously cozy with Sue, even more so than Carolyn, or Caroline, I don't know how to say it. I think again, it's a struggle to see him going home. But a flawed player, which is the kind of player I like. You know, I'm a flawed player. I think flawed players are entertaining TV. But he's a flawed player. And so, is he going to win? No, but he's certainly going to make it through next episode, I think.
Yeah. And Gabe, he was playing so strong and I was really praising him because in the preseason, his content just seemed so bad. I was like, this guy's going to be one of the first two or three boots. Like he is toast. And then he started playing the game strong. He found the idol. He wasn't as aggressive to people, all that. But when he was talking to Kyle last week and then Kyle immediately was like, I want to get rid of him now. I was just like, oh man, what did Gabe do that is going to have people start, you know, wanting to flip on him? So I do have him a little bit lower, although I feel like it shouldn't be that hard over there. And I feel like they shouldn't want to get rid of him because he is physically strong. He seems like he's in with everybody. And even if Kyle doesn't necessarily feel good about Gabe, it's like Gabe doesn't want to come after you, Kyle. He's trying to stay on your side. So yeah. Gabe should be higher in my rankings, but I'm just so concerned that Kyle tried to spin it on him so fast.
I completely agree. I mean, like, the thing about Survivor is that, like, you know, right or wrong, a lot of the super fans who come out to play don't do that well. And they don't do that well because Survivor is a, like, charisma-based game. There are certain people who have all the charisma and they're always going to rise to the top because they're naturally more likable than other people. I'm not that charismatic. I'm super tall. I think it works to my benefit to, like, you know, get authority and standing. So that I've got that going for me. But some people just don't have it and they alienate and they push others away. And I get the sense that maybe Gabe is socially alienating. And so I think it bodes poorly for long-term prospects.
Yeah. We'll have to see how that ends up working out. Cause Gabe's edit right now definitely has me feeling a certain way of confused and such. So we'll see what goes on there. So
yeah,
I'm at six. I have Keyshawn. I kind of hinted that this was coming anyway. I really love the position that him and Teenie are in. I don't have much to say to differentiate him, except, again, bringing it in terms of confessionals, fun to watch, has game for sure. So I'm in on Keyshawn. I don't see them spinning it on him this week. For Keyshawn to go home this week, Rome would have to side with Genevieve and Saul or want to play his steal a vote at Final 15, work with Saul, or be willing to not get rid of Saul, who's clearly never going to want to work with him, to vote out Keyshawn. It doesn't make sense. And I feel like Keyshawn is harmless at this point. So I have him here at six.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's more possible than you do. Is it going to happen? You know, probably not. But Keyshawn is good. He reminds me, you know, he reminds me a little of Omer. Like they're both kind of like cute people in the medical field who are like very nice, but strategic. And I don't think Keyshawn has the same finesse. I think that Teeny is really going to be the mover and shaker of that duo. But yeah, again, I think that there's like five people who are really in danger this coming episode, and Keyshawn is probably not one of them. So I like the sixth placement.
Yeah. Who you have at seven?
My seventh is Sue. So hot take, Sue is a bad player. You know, it sucks. A lot of our favorites are kind of bad, but Sue's a bad player. I always think that if you get mad at somebody voted for you, it's like textbook sign that you're bad. I mean, not everybody. Obviously, like Julie got a little mad at Jake, but you know, he voted for her a number of times. I mean, he really drove it in. So Sue, I get nervous about her. Her instincts are wrong, totally misreads Kyle. I think she's kind of got like a chip on her shoulder, you know. And I would actually, when I was making this list, I debated whether or not to say this on like camera, but I'm gonna do it. Every time she like talks about being underestimated, you know, or by men, she always immediately mentions her career, right? Mm. Like, and even not even in confessional, like when TK comes down on the beach, she's like, oh, he's talking, he's waking me up. He doesn't know I have the coolest job ever. Just like on the sand, I was like, that's kind of a bizarre thing to say. I feel like that she's kind of got this like, you know, she's out for the guys. She doesn't like the guys. She's not gonna be willing to work with the guys. Which is kind of ironic because we're talking about like dudes who are underestimating you. I mean, you're allied with the only one on your tribe who is like, who thinks you, you know, you're a broken bird with wings who I can pick up and carry. Like, okay, that's a little patronizing. So yeah, I think that Sue is not going to win the game. I don't think that she has like the perspective to pull herself out of like immediate feels and think mm-hmm. and think long-term strategically, or at least not that I've seen yet. But that being said, it's hard to imagine a world where she goes home, you know?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you just said there in terms of when you're discussing the fact that she got emotional over the Kyle situation. Kyle voted wrong for you, but Kyle comes back and says, guys, if you would have just told me, I would have voted for TK. Like, I thought we were doing this. You left me in the dark. So really, like, Sue, you can look at that and say, okay, I don't want to work with Kyle, but who else talked to Kyle to let him think you were the move? Because it had to be more than TK. Tiana was doing that. And honestly, if you feel really good with Caroline, then it was probably Gabe who was also doing it. So maybe you need to look at Gabe and say, Gabe, why were you trying to throw me under the bus? Why would Kyle think it was me going home? Somebody else had to have told him that because he didn't think that we were getting there with two votes. Like, sure. So I think that is short-sighted of her. But I do agree with you that she's long for the game. I actually have her at eight, so one spot lower than you. But I told you I had four of the people from yellow up here, and I have Rachel at seven. There's no way. Monica is going home if this happens. So I have Rachel at seven, and then I have Sue at number eight. You know, so I don't really have anything to add on Sue. So I'll talk a little bit more about Rachel instead. Yeah. I just think Rachel right now, Rachel feels to me like Kyle over on blue. Kyle was on the wrong side of the numbers for the first vote, but that didn't mean everybody wanted to vote Kyle out of the game. They just wanted TK out of the game, and TK was the target. That doesn't mean that because you aligned with him, you are now going to go next. You can rebound because we like you. That to me feels like Rachel. I feel like Annika right now is who the sights are set on. And because Rachel is in with Annika, they're leaving Rachel out of a lot of stuff. Because they don't want Rachel to then go back to Annika and Annika start looking for advantages and idols and whatever other nonsense and potentially flip the game. So she's being left out of things. But once Annika is gone, that is a group of four that could go deep in the game. And I could even see Andy and Rachel potentially flipping on Sam and Sierra later in the game because they realize that's an inseparable pair. It's just right now, she looks like she's in such a bad spot. But it's like she's fourth place, but she's an 8-8 football team, and the fifth place team is 0-16. Like, that's how it really is right now. It's not, not that she's in a terrible spot. She's just not in with the three. So I have her at seven, and then I have Sue at eight.
Yeah, I see that. I mean, it really does feel like Rachel's kind of like low man on the totem pole a little bit, like in terms of like information sharing. Like I recall like the when Sam finds the idol, she's like the last person to know, and she's told more of like obligation than anything. Like, gee, that sucks. You know, how did you find yourself in that position when you were kind of like a social lodestar at the start of the game? But I do agree that Annika going is not a death blow to Rachel. The one thing I worry about is that if Annika goes, you need like some time with Rachel to like pull her back in. Mm-hmm. Like, I worry that if Annika goes and then immediately they go to Mergatory, then Rachel's just kind of left adrift. Like, there are so many new people to work with and she's on the bottom, you know, and it's convenient to have somebody on the bottom of your group come Mergatory that she won't be able to be recouped. I think it's a lot better for her if Annika goes this episode versus like next episode. If Yellow's going to go to tribal again, which, I mean, strength wise, you feel like they must, but.
And it is interesting how you're bringing this up, because history says that Final 13 is when Mergatory is going to happen, which is funny though, because if you lose this week, then you have the potential to go next week and Rachel would probably be the one who would go if they lose back to back. But you're 100% right, because this happened with Caleb in your season, not to this same level, but we see Caleb have the big shot in the dark moment. The next day, you're all split into two tribes less than 12 hours later, and he's got no chance to really rebound. With how fast the new game works, you don't want to be on the outs of something right before a big change is coming. So
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Good point.
Yeah. And people don't always consider that in their timing, but they really should. Yeah. So anyways, I think that'll be key for Rachel. What number am I on?
Up to number 8.
Okay. My 8 is Teeny. Teeny is the other person with, Sam, and although we haven't seen it, potentially Saul, who I think has like great fundamentals for the game, mm-hmm. right? Like, Teeny's going to be a good player 9 times out of 10, you know, that they go out there. I'm not thrilled with the way this Rome situation is like, you know, it's kind of like insurance adjustment. I am from Detroit. And so if you drive in Detroit, you could be the safest driver in the world. You're paying a higher insurance rate, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it is what it is, you know, just because you live in the city. And so that's kind of my view on Teeny, you know, just because she's in like the Rome vicinity, like she's in more danger, you know, because it's a volatile environment. I don't think Teeny's going home. Teeny is like the last of my like very comfortable bracket. And after that, it gets a little bit dicier. But I've been very impressed by Teeny. And I think come merge with a bigger pool of players, like her situational awareness, like, you know, the ability to like stop mid stride and change directions to switch from Asia to Rome is that's a great skill. It's one of the most least common survivor skills that people have. So the fact that I see it, even though I don't necessarily agree, I like it. And I think that kind of like perspicuity will keep her safe in a worst case scenario for Red.
Yeah, no. And I think one thing that I really noticed in this last episode, and I've never felt like playing, you know, orgs or LRGs or any of that stuff has ever really mattered for people, because we're all survivor nerds. And like, you know, well, you know, a lot of people who go out there, it's, oh, I'm going to play this and I'll go play like whatever Survivor Gettysburg or something. I will say that there was something about watching Teeny in this last episode where, from playing as many games as she has, there's a comfort to her walking around and discussing with people. It's like she practiced for the game. And a lot of people who play those other games are like, ah, there's nothing to lose. I'm just going to have a good time, whatever.
Yeah, she prepped.
When you think that's your only chance of playing, you take it maybe a little bit more seriously. And just watching her walk and talk, I was like, oh, man, there's game here. Like, there's
smooth. Yeah, I agree. I didn't know she had been all like in the orgs and stuff. How did you find that out?
I know that somebody had posted that she was in like Survivor Gettysburg or something like that. Somebody had posted a GIF of her like shaking somebody's hand from the YouTube video. So I have no idea.
Well, it makes sense. I mean, it's a practice touch. Like, I would get fooled for sure. Also, I met Teeny in real life, like super cool. I was like, oh, wow. Like, you were definitely a threat out there. Like, you really buttered me up like nice and quick. Mm-hmm. I like her. I like her.
Yeah.
She's my 8.
So we've both done 8. So who do you have at 9?
My 9 is Keyshawn. Okay. You know, I made the Omer comparison earlier, but he's got less finesse. And I'll give an example of that, which is his answer at Tribal. And he had this one is like, Jeff's like, what's the plan? You know, which is always like a stupid question, because I'm not going to tell you. But Keyshawn's like, the core four is going to make a decision. Okay. So on the surface, that's like a nothing statement. Cause like, obviously there's a group of like four people who thinks they're, you know, they're in it. But what that really indicates to both tribes is that number one, Keyshawn is committed himself to two groups of four, because if he had just committed himself to one, he wouldn't have said that, which means Keyshawn is in the middle and Keyshawn is playing both sides. So like that innocuous, like cutesy little statement, which seems like a nice thing to do, actually has like pretty considerable social consequences. I mean, if I was out there, that's how I would interpret it. And so I just, I don't know. I don't see the same potential in Keyshawn as I do Teeny. And so I think if something were to go wrong on the Red Tribe, and direct towards those two, I think he would be less able to get out of the way of the freight train.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do agree. I mean, I have Keyshawn below Teeny. I just feel like he'll be okay here. It's funny, and I'll get to Rome in a second, but I just feel like that comment probably goes so wrong for Keyshawn if they did vote out Genevieve last week. Because if Genevieve goes home, Rome comes back, he hates Keyshawn, and now he's got his eyes set on Keyshawn because Keyshawn made that comment at Tribal.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think Saul has the power to do anything with it right now.
What if he finds an idol, you know?
It's true. They talked about him looking for stuff. We haven't seen him looking for anything, so we'll see. But, well, at my number nine, I have Genevieve. So you had her all the way up at number two. I finally get to Genevieve. I just feel like, because we've seen so little of Genevieve, I can't really get too overexcited about my positioning of her. I also think, though, that the community has overreacted in such a massive way, calling her purple Genevieve and, oh, we saw more of this, that, blah, blah, blah. I said, I've been saying this all the time. She's had three confessionals in three episodes, which I get. It's 90-minute episodes, whatever. There's people who got four confessionals and literally made it to like final six, like, or final eight or final 10, whatever it is. Like, you have to be, like, don't throw around purple and make it lose its meaning. We also got her doing the mama mentality and we got her on the bench last week. So I actually feel like Genevieve's been a part of the show. We're just not necessarily hearing her talk one-on-one to the camera the way we're used to with a lot of people. That being said, I feel like if Saul does find an idol, gets any type of power, see you later, Rome. It's got to be him. So yeah. Genevieve, I think, is safe because it's either going to be Saul or Saul's going to figure out something and he's going to spin it on Rome, not Genevieve. Why would you vote out Genevieve right now?
Completely agree. It does worry me a little bit, though, that like Genevieve talking to like Mr. Flint on the bench, like, okay, obviously she's a character. She's a little kooky. Maybe they're kookied out with Rome. They don't need any more kooky. But you know, when somebody has stuff to offer and isn't getting confessionals still, then I start to get a little cagey. But yeah. Maybe it'll be like a jump start come merge.
Yeah. We'll have to see what ends up happening with her. I know it's been a weird edit so far for her. Not a good one. Not a winning one. That's for certain.
Oh,
so.
No way. I mean, very atypical new era. Yeah. All right. My number 10 is Andy. I like Andy a lot. This is a metaphor I've used before. I think I used it on Jake at some point in like my discussion of the season. But sometimes when you're like into a girl and you want the girl to like you so bad, you screw it up. You know, and for so many people, Survivor is that girl, right? And Andy has been talking, you know, Andy's been wanting to be on Survivor for years. It's actually funny. If you go and look on Survivor Sucks for my season, there was speculation before the cast dropped that Andy was on season 45. Mm-hmm. So he was somebody who had been clocked as being deep in the process for like a long time.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. I can't believe they cast him anyways. But the point is Andy wants it so bad that he screwed it up a little bit. It's a tailspin. So for that reason, I think there is still a chance that Andy could really screw things up with Sierra, could still go home. I mean, could tank himself. But I do think that, he's got longer longevity, as you do. So again, I wouldn't be surprised if he goes home. I mean, it really feels like, he's a valuable number to Sam, and Sam, you know, the girls are a little clicky. Annika, you know, is not vibing with him. So it would be foolish to get rid of your own male ally.
Yeah. I mean, I have Andy at four as opposed to you having him at 10, but it is funny. My thought process behind Andy is the only way he goes home is if he completely implodes. I'm like, so that won't happen this episode, but it's like, well, what happened on day two? He completely imploded. So it can happen. I just, you know.
I know they're screaming his name from the beach. You know, maybe he's sinking the boat. Maybe there's some profound display of stupidity that just buries him. I don't know. I mean, you got to take precautions in the power rankings.
That is true. No, that's a good point, because if it goes wrong, he might spiral and have a Cochran-esque mentality going into this, and that might get him voted out. So we'll see. All right. Well, that being said, my number 10, I have Gabe finally. I'm still freaked out that all of a sudden Kyle wants to go for Gabe, and then maybe that, you know, if Tiana's willing and all that. But I feel like Gabe, I feel like the Gabe Caroline Sue alliance is the real alliance there. I feel like Tiana's the one who's in trouble. Yeah. Tiana was at the bottom of my power rankings last week. She's near the bottom of my power rankings again this week. I feel like Gabe will get through this vote, but I wouldn't be totally shocked if he doesn't. So that's, you know, kind of like you said, you got to hedge with the power rankings. That's why I got him sitting here at number 10.
Yeah, I can see that. I feel like for Blue, I have a pretty clear vision of like what goes down, or at least the two most likely scenarios. And I do feel like Gabe, like the probability goes way down for that third. So we'll have to see. You know, Tiana and Kyle, similarly, I want to talk about them, but they're like so much farther down my list that I guess we'll save it. My number 11 is Rome. It feels like the right spot for him. Rome is one of those players that is like, you know, what did John Lovett say? You know, like I burn bright, burn quick or something
Like that. Yeah.
Like coming out of a, you know, Hallmark movie. But anyways, that's how I feel about Rome. Like we're getting treated to this display, but it's not going to last long. I think that Rome he makes some good decisions, like taking the one thing idle in front of both of them to, like, you know, bail himself out of like this situation, give them some cover too, right? So that they didn't have to like go actively against him or go looking for it. That was a great move. But like buying the excuse, not a great move, you know. So he's very up and down in his gameplay. I think that the edit is intentionally making him look more malicious than he is. Like, it seemed obvious to me that his tribe mates are extremely lazy and not helping him with the fish. So when the edit takes a stance against you like that, that's tough. Like, uh-oh, what does that mean? Basically, it wouldn't shock me if Keyshawn and Teeny recognize that in Seoul, there is a reliable person who is steady, is like a straight shooter, and it's not easily bullshitted. And they decide to take out Rome, especially if Rome gets like idle fever, you know, looking for the thing. So that's my rationale.
No, I agree with you. And I actually have Rome in the same spot. So I also have him at number 11. And I like what you said there with Saul, because if you're coming in as Saul, and look, I get Saul's the older guy here. So, you know, maybe we see him like, maybe there's a little bit of like a, you know, a misconnection there with some of the younger players. Yeah. But when you think about somebody like Saul, your easiest selling point is I'm cool, calm, and collected. Like, I am literally the most level-headed player out here right now.
Yeah.
Why would you not want to work with me? And why would you rather work with Rome? And I feel like Rome in this alliance with Teeny and with Keyshawn and Genevieve, I feel like that's real. But, you know, I always make my Game of Thrones references on here, and I'm rewatching it right now. And my wife and I just finished season 3. And I always feel like the original Darian Aharis is so much better than the guy who comes in after him. And he has a line in there where he says, I'm Darian Aharis, and I always have a choice. And I feel like with Rome, that keeps going through my head where it's, I'm Rome Cooney, and I always have a chance of going home. Like, always has a chance. There is always a chance, because he will never, ever, ever just take the easy route. He is good. I love that. Play the damn game.
Yeah.
Love that. But that's what I think of every time. I can just hear it. And I'm just like, damn, Rome always has a chance of going home no matter how safe he feels. So I got him at 11.
If I was on that tribe, I'd be taking shots at Rome left and right. I mean, it's not somebody you can go into the merge with. I mean, they have not going to be a loyal player. So it's hard for me to take that perspective out of it and be like, oh dear God, like, why would you? I mean, like, Rome is the level where I would be like thinking about throwing a challenge. Like, that's how dangerous that kind of player is. But so I like the Game of Thrones reference. I think, you know, 11, obviously right place to put him. 12 for me is Tiana. And the thing about Tiana is that, like, you know, obviously a good player, like obviously somebody with some potential. And yet the tribe dynamics not with the right group of people, you know, not with the chill young people. She's with like three of the, like, she's not with the chill people. TK is like so aggro. Carolyn is a little awkward. Gabe is like, you know, Gabe, I don't know what Gabe is, but he's not chill. Then you've got TK, like a lone chiller, just lying on the beach, waiting for somebody to be cool with. She's not going to find it. So I worry. I think that she would have definitively been the boot if Kyle had like an all-time catastrophe. I mean, not an all-time, but a catastrophic episode. Losing his vote and not going for an advantage, not doubling up. Shocking.
That was terrible, right? You have to go for the advantage there.
That to me says that maybe he's not the most savvy player and like, you know, maybe I shouldn't be expecting optimal play. But then third, burying Gabe's lifeline because Sue's going to go right up to camp and be like, can you believe this toxic man who says that, you know, you think I'm a goat? And Gabe's going to be like, that's horrible. Let's get him out right now. Yeah. You know? So it's like, oh, I mean, just from the sheer momentum of an awful episode, you got to feel like Tiana has, you know, probably not out of her own doing, but got some cover. I feel bad for Tiana. I think if Tiana had been put on a different tribe, you know, I mean, we're looking at somebody who will probably make late merge. But I mean, she wasn't.
She was my preseason winner pick, and she's just on the wrong tribe. And I feel like she didn't even realize getting rid of TK, she was in a lose-lose situation. Because if she doesn't get rid of TK, then it's a tie, and then she goes to Rocks. She was never going to do that. You don't do that at Final 17. No reason. You don't know these people. But at the same time, now she votes out TK. If they lose again quickly, they might say, okay, we got to get rid of, you know, we got to keep the men because the men are so strong. I mean, you were there for boys' night or whatever it was. Like, you know that the men are the buff ones. And so I feel like if that is the situation, that's just the way of thinking. Well, Gabe's not going to get rid of one of his two female allies. He is going to get rid of the other, and that is Tiana. So I've actually been going back and forth nonstop on whether I think it'll be Tiana or Kyle who go home, but I will go ahead and I will actually, I'm going to stick with my guns here, and I'm going to put Kyle ahead of Tiana. So I'm going to put Kyle here at 12. I'm going to put Tiana at 13.
Okay.
Because I do think Blue, we talked about it earlier between who's going to go. And I do think that Blue probably is a little bit better of a chance to go to Tribal Council than Red. But I also feel like I'm just so confident it's going to be Saul if Red goes that I'll put Saul beneath both Tiana and Kyle here. And I actually think, so first of all, when he reached into that bag and pulled out no vote, I said, okay, he's got to go for it. And then he didn't. And I was like, what are you doing? Because I actually think, and I'll let you go because I can tell you're chomping, but I actually think Annika made the right move by not going a second time because she thought she's in the numbers. Kyle knows he's not in the numbers. What do you have to lose by losing your vote for a tribal council you're not even going to be at?
Yeah, the thing is it's like Kyle, if Kyle is lucky enough to survive one vote, and he's strong enough that he can get to the merger story where it doesn't matter. And the other thing is, like, if you're on the bottom, like Kyle is, that advantage is something great you can leverage. I always think of Marty Piombo, or however you say his last name, on Nicaragua. We're going old school. But he's got an idol. He's like, Sash, if you let me get through this, I'll give you the idol. I don't know why he just didn't play it. But, I mean, it worked. Sash let him get through, like, a tie vote where he should have been dead to rights. Leveraging an advantage to somebody like Gabe, who Kyle knows is like hungry, aggressive. I mean, it's so easy. So there's really, it's baffling not to take the advantage, right? Horrible, horrible play. I felt that Annika also should have gone for it. Because if Annika thinks that she's in the majority, right? Think she's totally covered, then it shouldn't matter, right? Like, let's say Andy goes, okay, well, the girls are still there against Sam. And she probably assumes she has a better relationship with Sierra than Rachel does. Mm. So, I mean, not doubling up, horrible decision. If you're out there, you know, go double up, viewers in the chat. But I'll tell you, Phil, and I mean, I'm going to take a stand outside the power rankings, but I see a lot of negative press on these journeys where you don't have a choice, you know, like, and in fact, you're pretty,
I hate them.
You hate them, but that's kind of confusing to me because you do have a choice. Like going on the journey is the choice. Journeys aren't always for the best. You can have horrible journeys. Like sometimes I miss my train. I have to walk home. That's an awful journey, right? Mm-hmm. A journey is a risk. So I don't know. If you're committing, you got to be ready for maybe something bad on the other side.
Here's what I will say about that though. And this is what my biggest complaint is, even more so than like it being just like a forced thing. I like when the players make their choice. But here's what I will say. For me, it's this. I never remember, I can't tell you anything from the journeys in the new era of why somebody went over somebody else. So what the conversation around the journeys becomes is, did they take the chance? Did Hunter attempt to put the seasons in order and fail? Like, did somebody try to do something that then they failed at? That's what the conversation is. Because the conversation at this point is everybody's doing rock, paper, scissors or odd numbers or whatever. You barely remember why somebody's going. So from a viewing perspective, okay, I actually think it's better to make them make a choice there. Because I will say, like, you watch somebody make the choice and go for it, that makes you say, okay, I want to know more about this person. Tell me more.
It's true. I mean, from a viewing perspective, you're definitely right. From like gameplay perspective, I do feel like my opinion is defensible, but it kind of speaks to like a little bit of a game design contradiction sometimes in Modern Survivor. Like, you guys have anonymized all the seasons and you're going to have a journey last season that trades off like the differences of Survivor history. And now it's just all numbers. You couldn't do that today. That's kind of interesting. You know, that's an interesting choice. So I see what you're saying from like a viewing perspective, but too many of these advantages are now seen as like sure things. And it's like, oh, like the adventure is gone behind finding an idol. You know, it's just, it's like a fun little mini game. And the journeys are kind of taken the same way. I mean, journeys should be existential. I liked in 44 when they swapped tribes. Like, that's a real consequence for taking a risk. And that's how it should be. And Survivor right now is really trying to, I think, balance like where risk taking fits in. You know, with like the auction, they brought the auction back for 45, but there's no advantage, you know, because they can't quite figure out what balance of risk and reward they want is. And I feel like the experimentation with journeys is like symptomatic of that. They're not sure if journeys should be just, you know, good, but opt in if there's a danger of necessarily being bad. And I don't have the solution, but I don't think it's as toxic a quality as a lot of people do. I don't mind when it's a forced decision because you already made your decision to go. Yeah. All right. I'm sorry. I monologued. Which one am I on?
You are 13. On 13. So I've done my 13.
Yeah,
so
you're on
13. Yeah.
Okay. Mine
you
is
can
on
kill yours if you want. If you want to get yours out of the way, or I can kill mine first. Up to you.
Oh no, you can go. You can go first on 13. Sorry.
No. So I already did. I'm saying if you wanted to kill your power rings, if you wanted to just give your reason.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So, I mean, obviously bottom three, you know, yeah, one from each tribe, Annika, Sol, and Kyle. I put Kyle at the bottom, not because I think it makes the most sense edit-wise for him to go, but just, I mean, bad gameplay and like in what seems to me to be insuperable odds. I mean, he really should be a dead man walking. So it's hard just on that logical grounds to deny that he should be on the bottom. Sol, similarly, like, great gameplay, in my opinion. Like, I see so much potential in Sol. And I'm sure, I think in Emerge, the game really opens up for him if he can get there. But he's just stuck. I mean, he's got this vendetta against Rome. There's no wiggle room. I mean, it's kind of like a Kyle situation where he's burned his bridges and like he just has to hope, you know, they somehow win out the challenges. Annika, on the other hand, I feel like has really made some poor decisions. Mm-hmm. And Annika has gone from a place of relative safety to seeming like the obvious boot, despite being ostensibly in the majority, which is crazy. I mean, it's hard to think of somebody like that has been the case pre-merge. In the new era. So that's my 1, 2, 3. I wouldn't be shocked if any of those three goes, or I guess maybe like Tiana or Rome too. But yeah, I it's unfortunate because I like a lot of these players. I mean, a lot of the people at the top of my list I don't particularly care for, but Sol and Kyle I think are great dudes. Annika brings some, you know, entertainment, at least some tension. So yeah, what's your bottom three?
So what did you have? So you had Annika at 14 or 13?
Yeah, Sol at 14, Kyle at number 15. Okay.
So I also have Sol at 14, but I put Annika in the bottom spot. And my reasoning is I do feel like that tribe is probably the one that's going to go. And it's just like with her not having a vote. So this is where I thought it was the right decision not to keep going. But I understand your point, too, of like why it is she should have kept going. Yeah. But I feel like if she felt like she's got the numbers, she feels like, okay, we got a 4-1 against Andy here. It doesn't matter. So for her there, like the risk versus reward, maybe she should have gone one more, whatever, but she's looking at it. She doesn't even need her vote for this next episode. But Annika, because of that, she has no vote. It is 3-on-1. Like Rachel can do nothing to actually protect Annika at this next vote. If they even let Rachel in on what's happening, which I don't know if they're going to. Yeah. And Annika is bringing it, I think, in a huge way. Like, I think she's super entertaining. I like kind of seeing this younger, female, bossier, know-it-all kind of player. We don't really see that, and that's been fun. And she's doing it with a smile on her face and a really nice hat.
See, but they've been casting this player. This player just always goes out pre-merge. You know, like they've given this archetype like 5 or 6 chances recently, and every time it's a pre-merge boot. You know, yeah. So I mean, maybe that says something about like our society and expectations. I don't want to get like deep on it, but but I mean, at the very least, I mean, it bodes track record is bodes poorly for Annika. And just to go back to like not doubling up on the advantage, I feel like I had a point. I mean, it's so late for me. I might be forgetting it, but like if you Annika's written off Andy. She's not working with Andy. She's not interested. She's not giving him the time of day. So he's got no choice but to drift the other way. So you're in a situation where if Sam and Sierra side with Andy, you're screwed. Having your vote isn't going to, you know, change that. Mm-hmm. And if Andy goes, like, are you going to lose both of them? Or are you going to, you know, be in the mergatory with that thing? And then if you lose both of them, I mean, it's still kind of a 50-50 between you and Rachel. And you may get an advantage where you can pass on to Rachel, like a steal vote that would offset the vote loss. So there are so many reasons why going for that extra double up, I think, is the right play. And her not making it, I think, evinces like a fatal lack of awareness about like what her options are, this vote and the vote down the line.
Yeah.
So I'm worried.
I do agree with that, that she's not realizing that she doesn't have the options she thinks she has. Like they're not there. And I think, but again, we can have this discussion about should she have picked one more? Should she not have? Should Kyle have picked one more? Should he not have? We can have a discussion about when they reached in the first time. And that's what I like about the non-forced advantages. Let them make the decision so we can sit here and Monday morning quarterback and tell them where they were silly. You know, that's what I like. So
no, I get it. The thing is that so much of Survivor is like, there's a lot of luck involved in Survivor, in like tribe dynamics and things like that. And so I get like the sets wanting to be the Monday morning QB, but for me, this is like just a more overt, like highlighting of the luck aspect of Survivor, which is, by the way, not something that the producers are trying to de-emphasize. Like the producers want you to know there's a big luck, big chance element in the game, like with the shot in the dark. I think if you've got an issue with these, like choosing not to play, for like deeper, like fairness related things rather than like the Monday morning QB, which I totally agree with. I think your reason is a lot more justified and valid than like a lot of the complaints I see, but like get rid of the shot in the dark too, you know, take out the luck aspect, take out this, like, you know, this like circus fairground game, like, oh, anything could happen. You know, but anyways.
Yeah. Well, I got 3 questions for you before I let you go, and you can give as quick or as long of answers as you want. So my first one is, who do you think is going to win this season?
Okay. My assessment of this season is you're going to have like maybe like a 43 slide to the end. I don't think the players on the whole are that strong. I think the women are stronger than the men. I'll bet you a woman wins. But I mean, it's tough. Who do you choose? I think Sierra is a viable prospect. I think she's someone I would look to as potentially good. I think there's no way Sam makes it to the end and doesn't get sniped. From that tribe, from the blue tribe. I felt like during the cut, it was like maybe you won't have the votes you need to get to the end. It like panned to Gabe. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Mm. On the blue tribe, maybe Sue, I could see, cause she's getting a nice edit. On the red tribe, I think Teeny and Kayshawn have to be looked at. I think Teeny more so. So I think Teeny, Sue and Sierra are like my like 3 most viable picks. What about you?
I mean, at this point, it's funny that you say this because Carl also went with Teeny last week. So that's back-to-back people who have mentioned Teeny up near their top.
She's too strong, though. I don't think she'll win. She's the least likely of those.
It almost, at this point, feels like it's becoming obvious, right? Like, Teeny's getting very, like, under the radar, edit, makes sense. Rome's over here doing this, and she's getting the very even-keeled. Everything is, like, so nice. So, I would say that probably yeah, I don't know. I'd probably say Teeny, or as more of like a long shot, I could see Rachel actually winning.
Yeah, I like Rachel's prospects, and she does get some content, you know? It's like a Michelle Fitzgerald thing where it's like, okay, did we really need to hear from Rachel here? I mean, cool, but I'm not seeing like, yeah, I don't know. We haven't really got much from Rachel. I think the skills are there. For me, I'm not opposed. I don't think that she's like X'd out, like no chance. Mm-hmm. Like I think that probably Gabe is, Sam is, even though I like Sam. But I need a little bit more information. So that's where I'm at on Rachel. I like the pick though.
So she's probably four. And I do appreciate that you brought up Michelle Fitzgerald. Anytime her name gets brought up on this podcast, it's, you know, it's always a good thing. So, you know, you'll be getting positive notes from me after this.
Oh, I didn't know that. Are you a big Michelle fan?
Biggest. That's pretty much the only reason people still listen is because during season 32, I was such a trooper. There was no way she was losing to Aubrey. So
I always thought Aubrey probably should have won. But
no, don't say that. You were doing so well.
It's a big gripe of mine, Phil. The jury is wrong all the time. And I played Survivor. I promise you, the jury gets it wrong constantly. People on the jury, and I don't mean you tell me to stop if I'm like, you know, going on, but people on the jury make decisions based on spite and also based on what they think their portrayal on television will be based on who wins, right? Like if Maria votes for Charlie to win, oh, now suddenly Charlie's the strategic genius. Maria was supposed to be the strategic genius. She can't vote for Charlie. It's going to take away all her spotlight. And then Charlie loses, you know? Ooh, that's tough. Like Maria, you know, great player. But I mean, like that factors in. And yeah. I think that's probably why Aubrey lost. But who knows? Michelle's definitely still a good player. Winners at War proved it. So, you know, can't hate too hard.
Love Michelle. All right, my other two questions for you. If anybody from your season was going to play again on 50, who do you want it to be? Number one choice. You can pick yourself if you want to.
I think my upshot for 50 is relatively low. Like if I were to get out there, I'm not sure I'd do that well because I'm ethically against pregaming. I think it's stupid. Mm-hmm. But like, you know. How many other people are?
Not many.
I'm sure they're all going out.
I can tell you right now, the queen of Survivor, Sandra Diaz-Pline, loves pregaming, guys. So, like, you know, there's no ethics when it comes to that. So,
yeah, I don't. I mean, I see Survivor as an experience, and you're going to ruin the experience for yourself and for other people by pregaming. So I'll take the free vacation over the pregame for sure. Okay. From my season, I think I would want it to be somebody who had, like, a lot to give and didn't get to give it and maybe – has some tough feelings about that. Like Caleb and Kelly wanted to play so badly and they just, I mean, they got dealt not the best cards. I mean, sometimes it's people are like, oh, they had no chance. Like they, you know, they had cards, but I would love to see either of those two come back as kind of like underestimated, but like great talents who want it more than anybody. Those would be probably my picks. You know, 45, we're all friends. I mean, most of us, as far as I know, I don't really keep up people that closely, but so it's not like there's no bitterness. I just look at those two and I think those are people who have like, who really want to come back, you know? Yeah. And I, an act of generosity, I'll choose them over me.
And then in terms who
would you choose from 45?
Your season's tough. I feel like your season's a really hard one because there's a lot.
You don't have to choose me. Like it's okay.
No. For me, what's tough about your season is like somebody like Sabaya going out as early as she did. I want to see Sabaya play again. I want to see Caleb play again because look, I don't think Caleb hit his ceiling. I don't think Caleb's ceiling is winning, but I think Caleb didn't hit his ceiling. I want to see D play. Like if they're going to do a legend season, let's put D on that show. I would like to see Jake actually have some footing. Like I feel like your season has so many people to pull from. And, you know, I mean, like, how would you go out there? How would people perceive like Drew, who went on Jeopardy and did all this stuff? Would they want you to be out there with them? Because people,
I think I'd be a dead man walking, Phil. I really do.
Yeah.
I
mean, so
like, don't choose me in your draft. If some miracle,
you somehow sneak on. I would say, honestly, if I had to pick anybody, like, and this is in my dream season 50 scenario, I would want it to be D because I'd like to see D play against some Survivor legends. That would probably be my answer.
Yeah, D is interesting because like D had a lot of really tight allies that you know, were given to her and that she built, but was never really tested. In the way that like some players have to be. And like the showmance was like the ultimate idol, you know? I mean, that's like a hard stop. So I wonder how D would do against like better players. D reminds me of like Saul. Every time Saul reads somebody, he gets it right, you know, great intuition. And D has that intuition. So that's a good, you know, it's a good trait. But I'd be excited to see like the flexibility for sure. So that's a good pick.
Yeah. And then my last question is if anybody from the whole history of Survivor, who's the number one person you want to see actually play on 50? Number one person.
Oh my gosh. I mean,
you mentioned Marty Piombo somehow at the beginning of this podcast.
I love Marty Piombo. You know, Marty Piombo is like a great, like had more to give for me. I like him a lot as a player, but he's not who I choose for 50. Man, I'm trying to think. I mean, give me yours while I get some time to prepare.
So when I talked about it last week, I was saying James Clement is who I want so bad. I feel like it's been so long now. If I could get any of James, Amanda, Courtney, or Todd, any one of those people, I would feel like Survivor 50 delivered. I don't even care who the rest of the cast is. Yeah. We haven't seen them in so long, and they were so iconic for such – they were so iconic during the best portion of the show, in my opinion. Yeah. So if I had to go back, I would love for them to pull one of those four people, throw them on the 50 and let them play, because you can't say you're sitting here tired of James or Amanda anymore. They played three times in six seasons, but
yeah,
those seasons happened 14 years ago. So let's go bring them back. So I'd want one of my China core four there.
I like that. I like that pick. I mean, if we're going like from like, you know, that perspective, I would love to see Russell in 50. I think CBS has done with the Hans family, but I think that Russell has kind of, I mean, Russell's reputation has really fallen. I mean, if there's ever going to be a shot and after like, you know, 10 years of ridiculous social media behavior, maybe he's got a shot, but I don't know. Nobody's ever played a game like Russell, you know, like I'm a big Russell fan. I think he should want Samoa. I'd like to see him, but it's like a more realistic pick. I think that 50, they've got two options with 50. 40 was kind of like the coronation, you know? And so is 50 kind of the encore, or is 50 kind of like a way of like charting Survivor into like a new, you know, a continuing to grow franchise? If they bring back a bunch of five-time players for 50, it's kind of a concession that we're over the hill. It's like, we're done. We're not developing new characters or storylines. We're just going to keep playing like the, you know, we're going to be like that radio station that keeps playing like the Beatles, you know, just the greatest hits over and over till they get too old. And then we're going to get bought by Netflix. I hope that doesn't happen. So I would like to see some strong players from the new era come back who are potentially a little hot. I might like to see Shan. Would I ever want to play with Shan? No way. But I think Shan coming back is somebody I'd like to see. It was kind of like falling off the radar a little bit just because like 4 years have gone by or however long.
Yeah.
But that would be my like new era pick of like if we're building superstars, let's look at Shan.
I like that. I like it. There you go. All right. Drew.
No worries, Phil. Hopefully I didn't take up too much of your time. We're hitting 90 minutes, which is, you know.
I love that. I mean, you're the one who has to go to bed. It's dinner time for me. It's bedtime for you. So this is fine for me. But no, this was a great conversation. I'm so glad we were able to make this happen. I really appreciate you jumping on.
Yeah, thanks. Hopefully I don't like regret saying mean things about people. Like
you came like, in hot, then you backed off. I was waiting for you to start just like backing the bus up over everybody. And it didn't.
I know. Well, I got tired too, and then my spirit left. But hopefully I still did good for you, Phil. Hopefully I still got some hot takes. I'm sorry, Survivors listening. I think you guys are cool. Like, don't dislike me if we meet in person. It's like, listen, I'm in grad school, Phil. I do like literary studies, so I'm like reading books. I think a Survivor is just another media. Like, of course, I'm going to criticize Heathcliff and Wuthering Heights. You know, I'm going to have all my opinions about, you know, Jay Gatsby. But like, you know, it's you as a fictional character. So keep that in mind. And yeah, Phil, it was a great time. I'm glad to go through the power rankings. It's kind of sad in a way that it's like not a more interesting late pre-merge. I feel like we pretty much know what's going to happen. But you know, happy to do it nonetheless and speculate on everything.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, become a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. You can find out all the stuff we're doing over there by visiting the website. We got a whole bunch of content that comes out all the time, putting out Australian Survivor content. Will Blake and I are going through every season matters. We're getting to Guatemala at Thursday of next week. So that's exciting times ahead for everybody. And plenty of other content. So really exciting times to be a patron. Like this video, subscribe to the channel. Appreciate y'all listening. And Drew, it was a pleasure.
Of course, Phil. Take care. Take care, guys.
Bye, everyone.